Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the darkened corridors of power, and we shine a light ahead of us on the path to where evolution is leading. The purpose of Wiki Politiki Radio is to bring left and right front and center to face the music and dance together, to address problems rather than defend positions. We have another purpose as well, and that is to provide context at a time when the content can be contradictory, confusing, and overwhelming. Now, today is a very different and unusual show, as I'm interviewing somebody I've literally known my entire life, me. I'm interviewing myself. You know, I've done this show for 9 months, and maybe it's time for me to reflect on what I have learned in conversing with our amazingly wise and enlightened and forward-seeing guests, and then bring it all together and suggest some perspective and action for the near and distant future. It's so easy for people, as I've traveled around and noticed this, it's so easy for people to get caught up in the drama of Trump versus anti-Trump. So it's really, really important for us to hold a meta conversation about politics in the sense that we want to look at the larger principles at play to see from a higher perspective, see broader, rather than being pulled into the dueling dualities. Now, I am a political scientist by training, and nope, I never did actually get to dissect a politician in poli-sci lab. Never got quite that far. However, I do recognize three metaphysical, they're actually meta-principles of politics at play. And these three are, number one, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Lord Acton said that over 100 years ago, and it seems to be particularly accurate about what's going on right now, that when you have an unchecked and unbalanced power, that power tends to collect more power and disempower everyone and everything else. Number two, the principle, and it's a very unprincipled principle, but it's the principle of divide and conquer. It's a time-tested way to keep the populace from uniting around common interests, keep them occupied fighting one another. I remember right before the election, my friend and colleague Joseph McCormick, who was very active in the transpartisan movement in this country, who now lives in China, who moved to China to work as an engineer and got married, et cetera, et cetera. Right before the election, he sent me a photo, and it was a whiteboard. And on the whiteboard were these Chinese characters, which I couldn't read, didn't understand, but he provided the translation. And the translation was, neighbors fight, landlord benefits. Neighbors fight, landlord benefits. So it's been well understood that if you keep people occupied in conflict with one another, they will not be able to unite around their common interests. The third political principle is qui bono, who benefits, or as we say these days, follow the money. If you're wondering how to track a particular incident or perpetration, it certainly makes sense to notice who benefits. So For example, in this climate change debate that probably shouldn't be a debate at all, if we want to track a lot of the information that is debunking the idea of global warming, lo and behold, we can track that to fossil fuel companies who would benefit from not pursuing legislation to address global warming and climate change. So when we look at it from this point of view, from the point of view of these meta principles operating, and then the smaller pieces just being parts of that, we also recognize that much of what we do in our political engagement is look at the smaller pieses. We're actually involved in Newtonian politics, equal and opposite forces opposing one another. When we're living in an Einsteinian universe where things are all related and connected to one another. And we'll be talking about another of Einstein's principles shortly, which is a problem cannot be solved at the same level it was created. So we really seem to be on track toward a dystopian future, unless, of course, we awaken together and change course. I'm calling this awakening, which is already happening on many fronts, the great upwising, as in waking up and wising up, as we the people cultivate a new common sense, a commonly sensed consensus that moves above and beyond left and right to the heart and soul of who we are. So today we're going to look at the current political, again, our new word still applies, situation, from an evolutionary perspective, and we're going to address three questions. What so? So what? Now what? What so? And in what so we have both the awful truth and, fortunately, the awesome opportunity, because, again, the Chinese tell us that crisis is another way of saying opportunity. So if we have multiple crises, we obviously have a great opportunity at hand, and it really makes sense to focus on that opportunity and look at the crisis from that standpoint. The Swami. Swami, are you here? Swami has something to say about our political situation.
Why, we have a deeply divided body politic. Half the people believe our system is broken, and the other half believe it is fixed.
Okay, well, actually, we have a deeply united body politic. Most Americans agree our system is broken, and it is fixed. Consider these interesting statistics. Did you know 96% of Americans agree there's too much money in politics, and yet 91% believe there's not much we can do about it? A 2014 Princeton study concluded, and I quote, "The preferences of the average American appear to have only a minuscule, near zero, statistically non-significant impact on public policy." Unquote. The short translation is, what the people want doesn't really matter. Another stat. In 2017, only 18% of Americans said they can trust the government in Washington to do what's right, in contrast to 80% approval during the Kennedy years. Finally, in a 60 Minutes broadcast just a few days before the 2016 election, 3 out of the 25 voters polled said they were voting for the candidate of their choice. The other 22 said they were voting against another candidate. So there we have it. We have a national government that seems to have earned the mistrust of the people, and citizens have come to understand that its power has been usurped by the unchecked, unbalanced, and unmitigated power of money. People are frustrated, disgusted, cynical, disheartened, and apathetic. It's why in this country, of all of the so-called democracies around the world, we have the fewest, the smallest percentage of people who actually bothered to vote. And then, of course, we have a political party, the Republican Party, that's determined to make sure that even fewer people vote. As I said earlier, this political crisis may be our best opportunity to evolve the system our founders created for the 21st century. So the problem is not the government. It is the consciousness of the people who occupy it and are currently thwarting its checks and balances. I mentioned Joseph McCormick a little while ago. About 15 years ago, he had an epiphany. He was a conservative politician from Georgia who experienced a dark night and a transformation, and he decided that it was his mission to heal the body politic, to reunite America, and to find out what was at the root of the political malaise that we've been experiencing. And so he got a grant, and he went to interview political thought leaders across the political spectrum, from Noam Chomsky and Ralph Nader on the left to Grover Norquist and Ross Perot on the right, and many, many people in between. And pretty much everybody came to a similar conclusion. Our problems stem from lack of citizen engagement. And of course, this lack of engagement has been made worse by an entrenched two-party system addicted to campaign money. I heard a wonderful presentation at the UNRIG conference in New Orleans this past February by centrist project activist Catherine Gehl, that's G-E-H-L, and Michael Porter, and they called the problem, quote, the political industrial complex. That is, all of the people, all of the institutions, all of the money-making operations that benefit from things as they are right now, from keeping this two-party system and keeping the polarities alive. So some of the other factors that have marginalized the people. First, number one, pay-to-play politics where free speech of money drowns out all other free speech. We have the Citizens United, which is a very strange and Orwellian name for something that essentially thwarts the will of the citizens, that Supreme Court decision that further entrenched the power of money as speech. That is a problem. It's preempted real people. Number two, we have the high cost of campaigning, than the nearly constant fundraising that legislators have to undertake to ensure being reelected. Number three, we have two parties using wedge issues. Several weeks ago, I interviewed Eric Fogg about his book called Wedged, about how these polarizing issues are used by both political parties to keep the contributions coming and keep people voting for their party's lesser evil. Number four, we have gerrymandered political districts that encourage extreme positions rather than legislative cooperation. Number five, we have the mass media obsession with conflict, an argument that further polarizes the electorate. Number six, the two-party duopoly that makes it nearly impossible for third party or outside the mainstream ideas to take hold. We have another one, media complicity in the perpetrations of the American empire. You know, several years ago, I wrote an article about Fox News, and I called it, Come On Baby, Fight My Liar, because Fox News very blatantly lied to its people. And so I concluded from that people on the right wing like being lied to. I also concluded, and this is a very unpopular conclusion on the left, that progressives, that people on the left, prefer lying to themselves. And what I mean by that is that the lies of the mainstream media and of the progressive media, and I'm including NPR here, they're not so much lies that, you know, blatantly make up an untruth. They're more lies of omission. They're more the self-censorship to protect progressives from really, really looking in the face of the heart of darkness and the heartlessness of darkness. And one of the reasons why I think so many people went for Trump, people who would benefit from what would have been a progressive agenda, is because they were so disheartened and fed up with the Democratic Party's lack of courage and lack of vision in both confronting the very blatant evils in our system, including stolen elections, and also in the inability to really put forth a coherent, positive vision of a future. Someone said that Martin Luther's famous speech was not, "I have a complaint," that was, "I have a dream." And so the Democrats, in a way, have not really put forth a vision that is an empowering vision. Instead, what they've done is they focused on identity issues rather than the identical issues we all face, which is clean air, clean water, clean food, clean government. And, of course, we also have clean money. Meanwhile, the Republicans have defaulted to appeal to the fears of white folks, what we call white fright, while accelerating the exploitation of the planet and its peoples. I'm sure if they were going to write a autobiography of their own work, it would be called It Takes a Pillage. So here we are. We're in this situation where we've got two political parties, neither of which are really looking out for us. And that is the current situation. You are here. We have the Harvey Weinstein party of abusers that tell you exactly what they're going to do. And we have the Bill Cosby party of enablers who will drug you with hopium and then have their way with you. I know it sounds cynical. I'm sorry if you're finding that difficult to take. But I think it's really important to recognize that we have to transcend both of these particular political parties that keep the current problem in place. We're going to take a break. We've talked about what's so. Now we're going to talk about the opportunity. So what?
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo. We were a loving family, and then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day. People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything. I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, Steve Behrman back, WikiPolitik. Yeah, I'm talking with myself today about the great upwising, waking up, wising up, growing up, showing up differently and changing, shifting our perspective. I just read an article today, and it was really about how climate scientists are just devastated and disheartened as they're looking at what they know to be true, and they can't quite get that message across to the rest of the populace. People are already obsessed with too many other things, and frankly, looking at the kind of changes that we're likely to have to make in order to exacerbate this change, in order to deal with the change, in order to exacerbate the changes we have to make, are going to be challenging, to say the least. And so people would rather prefer, of course, the Republican plan is simply pretend that climate change doesn't exist. And, that works. Denial always works. They're on that drug called Deniatol. But I think progressives may be indulging in that same drug as well, because they're somehow people that I've met recently said, well, I believe in climate change. I think it's, I'm recycling. I'm doing my part. And so there's a sense of, I'm certainly better than those people that are denying it. But as we really look deeply into this issue, we look at the multiplicity of crises, not just the environmental crises, but the economic, political, and I would say spiritual crises, looking at the survival of our species, it would take a miracle. It really, people are looking for a miraculous something to happen. Now, it turns out that there is a template for miracles. There's a template for miracles, and it's called spontaneous remission. Bruce and I addressed this in Spontaneous Evolution. That spontaneous remission is, of course, when somebody has a life-threatening, fatal disease, and the doctor, medical establishment said there's nothing more we can do, and you go home and make the best of it. And a certain percentage of these people, for some inexplicable reason, recover. They get well. And so we've wondered, what creates these miracles? And so Louis Mail Madrona, who is an MD, associate of Dr. Andrew Weil, wrote a book called Coyote Medicine. And this book, Coyote Medicine, includes interviews with many, 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 many people who've had these anomalous, unexplainable, spontaneous healings. And the common factor that Dr. Madrona, Mail Madrona, identified is something that he called a change of story, a change of story. These people who are faced with death, who are faced with a life-threatening illness, there was something in that that sparked a fundamental change in their life, something that they were telling themselves, perhaps a belief, perhaps it was a job, a career, a relationship, something, a religious belief that was in the way of their happiness, and the symptoms of the illness appeared in response to that. And by addressing the symptom, at its foundation, by changing a story, they were magically able to heal from their condition. So Bruce and I came up with this idea that if we, the people of the world, want to have a spontaneous remission, we have to engage in a spontaneous remissioning. We have to change our mission and change our story. So if we look at the state that the world is in right now, I just had a wonderful conversation with Steve Newcomb, who is going to be my guest in several weeks on WikiPolitiki. And he's a Native American. He's also an attorney who spent years and years and years researching something called the Doctrine of Discovery. Back in the 1400s, the Pope issued a decree that said to the conquistadors that when you land on foreign shores, you have the right to usurp all the property from heathens, meaning anybody who doesn't believe in Christianity. They are not really humans. They have no rights. You can take everything from them. You can convert them. You can enslave them. You can dominate them. You can exploit them. And so the entire colonization of this continent including the displacement and, in many cases, massacre of the native peoples, was something that was decreed by papal law. And what's even more surprising is that in Supreme Court decisions negating treaties with native people in this country, those papal documents were cited. So the short story is that for 500 or 600 years, we have been given a license to extract, exploit, to dominate, etc. And so why this is important is not just for the native peoples. We've had this exploitation of the planet. We've had this exploitation of one another and of every resource that's available to us. And so at this point, we can no longer, and this is something that I think the climate scientists have realized before anyone, that we can no longer do the things that we've done in the way that we've done them and expect to survive, let alone thrive, as a species. So it's really important now to bump up to a new story. And the new story that Bruce and I offer in Spontaneous Evolution is that the next phase of human evolution is recognizing that we're all cells in a superorganism called humanity, or as I prefer calling it, humankind, because humankindness is the currency of this new organism. And once we recognize that we're really all part of the same organism, we begin to see warfare and other forms of exploitation and unnecessary forms of cutthroat competition as forms of autoimmune dysfunction, of healthy cells engaged in warfare with other healthy cells, compromising the life and well-being of our entire species. So this is where we actually have to activate the real politic, not the real politic of every man for himself, but the real politic of we're all in this together, that we're all part of the same organism, and that the way that we survive, it's not survival of the fittest, it's thrival of the fittingest. And those who fit into this cooperative environment will thrive, and everybody else or everything else will extinguish itself. We are at a totally amazing and unique point in history, because we now have the capacity to communicate instantly with people all across the planet. We have the capacity to vote instantly. We'll talk more about that later. And register our opinion and have that be counted and matter now. There are almost as many cell phones and personal devices on the planet as there are people. It's hard to believe. 7 billion personal devices. More people have personal devices than have shoes. It's amazing. And so we now have the capacity to communicate and to really upgrade and to really speak in one voice about our species' heart's desire. There's a famous quote from Dwight Eisenhower from more than 60 years ago, and he said, quote, "I think that people want peace so much that one of these days government had better get out of their way and let them have it." I suspect that we are out of necessity, we're at this Eisenhower moment when people of the world say we're ready to overgrow the insanity and evolve from children of God to adults of good. And maybe it's time to activate the real meaning of religion. You know, religion comes from the word religare. And religare, it has the same root as it really means to bind. Ligament has the same root as ligare, ligament. And so what religion was supposed to do is to bind us to the divine and the ineffable and the great spirit, to bind us to the web of life, to bind us to one another and put us in the context so that we can celebrate our individuality in the safe context of community. So a little while ago, the Swami came up with this idea. Swami, what's your saying? Well, I say we're all in the same boat. The Titanic is sinking, and the lifeboat is the love boat. Well, the Titanic the Swami is talking about is the dominate or be dominated model, the exploiter and the extractor. And that old world order of domination and exploitation will not and cannot get us through this next evolutionary passage. It's obsolete, and new word, obsoletal. And so it's really important that we recognize rather soberly that our entire species is in the midst of an existential crisis. That crisis is, do we want to continue to exist? Because, as I said, we will destroy ourselves, we will destroy our species doing what we've been doing: extraction, exploitation, extortion, and the other E of evil, extinction. So what we need to do, and this is the now what do we need to do? We need to call forth the coherence and the sanity of the entire body politic so we can think and act like a species and use our intelligence more intelligently and essentially begin the next phase of human evolution, where we actually weave this web of mass construction. Now, there are new organizations that are emerging. We don't know about this because most of the news is about what is falling apart, what is not working. But there have been organizations, and I've been happy to have some of these people as my guests, as solutionaries on WikiPolitiki, who've been working on technologies for communicating with one another and extracting wisdom, for communicating with one another and rehumanizing rather than dehumanizing, to see the value in all points of view, extract that value, and move beyond these positions to ways we can solve problems together. And it's worthwhile to understand that the voices of ancient wisdom and modern science are echoing the same realization. We are all in it together. So can Jesus and Einstein both be wrong? I don't think so. So what we're recognizing is that if we use this overarching meta-context, that we're in the midst of an evolution that'll bring greater awareness, connection, functionality, and well-being to our body politic, then it's going to be easier to see the symptoms of our current failing political system as the last throes of a dying order instead of a dystopian future. You know, it's interesting. After the 2016 election, Otto Scharmer, that's S-C-H-A-R-M-E-R, who has something called Theory U, came up with a brilliant paper analyzing the election. He said that when a civilization is in decline, that's us, when a civilization is in decline, there's three tendencies. One tendency is to build a wall and go backward. Another tendency is to cling to the status quo. And the third tendency is to connect with one another and move forward to build a future. Well, we had three candidates representing each of those. We know that the Trump presidency, the Trump candidacy, was about building a wall and moving backwards. You know, in a dominate or be dominated world, our problem was we didn't dominate enough, so we have to dominate more. We have to send tweets to Iran in capital letters to let them know that we're dominating. We have to rattle our sabers and huff and puff. And then we have to, treat other people heartlessly, which this administration is doing. So they're fulfilling their promise to take us backward. The second, status quo, that was the Hillary You know, the Democrats have not really been a progressive party in well over a generation. They've been a status quo party. They have, espoused the very functional ideas of minority rights and so on. But the way that things have played out, we now have minority rule, thanks to the Democrats' lack of vision and lack of courage. We now have a rule by the smallest minority in American history. The third way to build a bridge and move forward, that was the Bernie way. And, you know, it's interesting. Bernie was, condemned as a socialist. Bernie, as socialist mayor of Burlington, Vermont, in the early 1980s, like Paul Soglin, who was a socialist mayor of Madison, Wisconsin, in the early 70s, they both did the same thing when they got into office. They approached the local business community, and they began to work with the local business community to reestablish the downtown area, revitalize the businesses in the context of serving the betterment of all. Now, think about this. You know, if you want to believe in stereotypes, you can imagine that socialism is anti-business. No. What Bernie Sanders did is he found some money in some slush fund, and he used that money to rebuild the downtown of Burlington, Vermont, in the early 1980s, got the business community involved to the point where he was reelected again, each with a bigger landslide, because that view of socialism is the greater good of all. So when we come back from the next break, we'll address the now what portion of the program. Now, Steve Behrman, I'll be back talking to myself and to you after these messages.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
The Shift Network. Presenting transformative programs and events to help you awaken to your full potential so that together we can build the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Our classes support you in finding and cultivating your gifts and in bringing those gifts to the world to create tangible change and connect us as global citizens. Go to theshiftnetwork.com or follow the link on the Wiki Politiki sponsors page.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Okay, Steve Behrman back, Wiki Politiki. We're really talking about our current condition. What so? So what? Now what? Now that we recognize the crisis, that we have a system that is unworkable, that's not working, now that we have a larger context to look at it in, both the awful truth, looking at the how our system has been manipulated, and the awesome opportunity, recognizing that this is really an evolution, and that our symptoms are really the signs of a dying order rather than a dystopian future. So here is what I suggest we might need to do, and then we'll talk a little bit more about actual institutions that are doing it. First of all, there's been disheartenment in the heartland, and I think it's because of what I would call the absent sacred, that when we had, in societies that have a coherent sense of their relationship to the cosmos, whether through religion, whether through a shared ideal, then there's a sense of meaning and purpose in everything that happens. We've lost that. And so into the power vacuum has stepped the power of money, material, the machine. And so what we need is a coherent, uniting center from which we consider the divisive issues, a center that has fundamental truth so that we can see, quote unquote, fake news in context. So that's the first thing that we need. Secondly, we need a scalable, nonpartisan public platform for holding conversations among ordinary citizens where this sense of coherence is cultivated and strengthened. Nonpartisan, independent of government, independent of corporations, independent of mainstream media, so that it truly is and does represent the individual citizens of this country without spin. We also need media sources that are trustworthy across the political spectrum. You know, it's been 37 years since the last time Walter Cronkite said, "And that's the way it is." And so what we need now is something that is trustworthy, mainstream news that also includes outside-the-box points of view that can be proven to be based on factual information. We don't have that independent media, and we need it. We also need systems for citizen collaboration and co-learning organized around specific issues. We need also ways to heal the post-traumatic stress disorder in the body politic that we've been suffering that has led to our collective dysfunction. I would attribute that to the assassinations of the 1960s and other perpetrations that have rendered us emotionally and spiritually unfit to govern ourselves. Finally, we need an independent place and space where citizens can register their viewpoints individually and speak in one collective voice. So it turns out that we're in the process of creating all this. First of all, what we need is a place where we can have a national conversation. And I'm calling this the Department of Heartland Security. It's kind of a joke. It's part of what my colleague Richard Lang of Democrasoft calls an ecosystem for civic engagement. So first we need a place and a way to have massive conversations about meaning. It could be initiated by clergy and by ethical secular people, and it is around cultivating a sacred center that includes and encompasses both religion and non-religious expressions of ethical and sacred. The idea is for people to override the noise of our current political yelling and screaming and emerge with some common ideas about the commons and perhaps even a national purpose. Coherent unity will allow us to get through the passages that we have to get through right now, which include the environmental crises, the economic crisis, which is related to creating an economic system where that is renewable and restorative rather than exploitive and extractive. The second thing we need is an institution that Richard Lange is in the process of creating. It's called the National Town Square. I call it Freedom of Assembly for the 21st Century. Imagine a place and space where each individual citizen has a verifiable vote and can weigh in with an advisory vote on any issue without having to buy into a political party's entire package. Then imagine voters showing up by the tens of millions, or ultimately hundreds of millions, to speak coherently and collectively in one voice so that elected officials can know exactly where the body politic stands. This collective unity of one voice is the literal meaning of e pluribus unum, out of many one. Now think about this. This is not like the majority dominating the minority. It's simply speaking out about something that so many people agree on, but because of the way our corrupt system is compromised, the system is unwilling and unable to do something about it. We could look at the issue of money in politics. 96% of people want to do something about that. What if people gathered, 50 million people or 100 million people, at the National Town Square, each with a verifiable vote with banking level authentication, every participant's secure and personal voting account is completely anonymous, just like in the voting booth, but represents a real verifiable citizen, not a bot. No advertising, no trolls, no electioneering, totally transparent and convened by an unaligned neutral assembly of citizens. So this new institution, the National Town Square, would be independent of corporations, independent of media, independent of government, sacred, secure, transparent, and trustworthy. So imagine 50 or 100 million people voting a particular issue to the top of the charts and voting on true election reform. When you have those kinds of numbers, the actual legislators, whoever they are, whichever party they are, will have to take notice of that. And if they don't, then the body politic will recognize that it does indeed have the power to vote those people out of office, or particularly in the numbers that they will be voting, the power to override all the entire governmental system and pass a constitutional amendment. This can be done in most states by referendum. 2/3 vote. They will be able to do that. And then all of a sudden, we the people will be able to have our own voice to speak out on the issues that we are unified around, and that will give us more resources to deal with the areas of separation. Another institution is typified by something that already exists, living room conversations. Joan Blades, who was a founder of Move On, decided several years ago, she joined forces with Amanda Roman, who was a conservative activist, and they created these living room conversations to rehumanize each other rather than dehumanize. And these conversations are ways for people to share their stories, to listen to one another. And what happens in the wake of these conversations is that people will often depolarize from their positions. They'll feel more safe and they'll be able to come up with compromise solutions. The next level of this will be conversations throughout the country using the techniques developed by Tom Attlee, who wrote The Tao of Democracy, Jim Ruff, who wrote Wise Democracy and has developed tools for wisdom councils, citizen engagement. These amazing tools that are awaiting for us. Imagine citizens from across the country, across the political spectrum, coming together in groups to actually solve problems together. I know, as I'm proposing a sane world, I must be crazy. But again, when crises are so severe, that's when people cooperate. When there's a flood or a fire or a natural disaster, people cooperate. They come together without even asking, without question. We now have our political system, which is an unnatural disaster. And we have the same possibility for people to come together to rise above and to wise above the situation. Last summer, there was a wonderful, heartening story. There was a family off the coast of Florida who were stuck in a riptide, and they were going to drown. And the people on the beach made a human chain. They made a human chain to pull these people to safety. Now, I'm willing to bet that in the process of making this human chain, the people weren't asking each other, oh, excuse me, are you a Democrat or a Republican? Are you a conservative? Are you religious? None of that. They basically pulled together in the same direction. And so perhaps a vision that we can hold in contrast to the tug of war that has been taking place, that has been really destroying us on every level, that perhaps there's a tug of peace where we're all pulling together in the same direction as citizens who learn to talk and listen to one another, begin to cooperate and work together locally, because that's where things change, on generative projects to improve life for people in their communities. There's another interesting organization called All Sides. And All Sides was founded by a conservative, John Gable, a conservative, and he wanted to look at ways of helping people determine how and when news is biased. And so his site, All Sides Media, every week they send out a report with three different perspectives on the same issue. Now, the potential for something like this would be, imagine this. Imagine a transpartisan, verifiable, and authenticated, and trustworthy news site. What would happen if the vast majority of us were presented with facts we agree on? Imagine that. Imagine a news service becoming this trustworthy, transpartisan fact-check site. Now, there's still going to be people who will hold on for, you know, this wild belief or that. But what will happen is that there will be a coherent center that will empower this wise democracy that results from this ecosystem, an ecosystem where citizens have a place to gather independently of the two political parties and our political system, where citizens can gather independently and converse across party lines, using a platform that encourages people to listen and to speak from their hearts. Imagine having a transpartisan news site that would actually preempt much of what has been called fake news. And imagine people from all across the country, religious, non-religious, secular, ethical, coming together and being with each other to really create a sense of coherent purpose for our country. And then imagine actually facing the music and dancing together. Imagine having the ability to cooperate on such a level that we actually find the real solutions for climate change, which really involve using a lot less and involve disarming our civilian systems of fighting one another, and using that energy, saving that energy, and using it to provide food, to provide education. Imagine having an agricultural system that was regenerative. Imagine having a system of making and repairing things that was not based on planned obsolescence, on extracting unnecessarily and on what passes for slave labor. Imagine that. Again, the Bible says that where there's no vision, the people perish. Right now, unfortunately, the most coherent, and I mean coherent in the sense that the people who hold this vision know what they want and they're focused on it, the most coherent vision is the Donald Trump vision of moving backward, protecting our borders, making America a white country once again, imprisoning all of the pesky forces, exploiting the planet, using up our fossil fuels, and essentially creating a system where those who have more and those who have less suffer. Fortunately, 67% of us are on a different path, at least that I would say that Trump's hardcore supporters are really no more than 25 or 30% of us. But because there is no coherent, focused, vital, alternative vision, that's the vision that's dominating now. Our job is to animate and bring to life that new vision. Television. Turn off your TV and television. That's what Wiki Politiki is about. Steve Behrman, and we'll catch you next week.